Today's episode is a special one, guys. Today we sit down with Kevin Weeks. So Kevin is a former NHL goalie. He's now a broadcaster. You can find him on the NHL Network. You can find him on ESPN. He is literally an amazing, amazing human being. Well-spoken, like you could not believe. I even got a little bit of intimidated by this one. It's one of the first intros that I completely botched. I called him literally the exact opposite name. And so anyway, we're so thankful for Craig Morris, Dr. Craig Morris, for sitting down and making this all happen for us. It was super insightful, not only in how to build relationships, how to have a long career in the NHL, but all this stuff can be applied to our musculoskeletal experts that are tuning into these. And so I just wanted to hop on and say thank you again to Craig for making this amazing situation happen, and thanks for Kevin for just being an awesome guy. So anyway, enjoy this episode. This is our last one of the year, guys, and we thank you for riding with us for one more year. As always, our Spotify Wrapped at the end of the year is just insane. All the people that are listening, all the countries, all the reviews you guys have left, all the subscriptions on YouTube, things like that. So we're just so thankful to have each and every one of you, and we can't wait for 2024. See you soon. All right, everyone, welcome to another episode of the Gestalt Education Show. Today, we are in St. Louis, Missouri. We've got a return guest with one of our favorite doctors, Dr. Craig Morris. So, Craig, thank you for being on again.
My pleasure.
Craig brought a very, very special guest with us today. And so, we are excited to have Kevin Weeks on our podcast today.
Sip slowly. I told you to sip slowly. See what happened?
I know.
He's guzzling on them.
I always mess up the name, so that's about par
for
the course for me.
No, he's just guzzling on the bus.
He's never got nervous before.
I just did.
He's guzzling.
So
transition him to the tequila.
That's right. I need all the good stuff. So,
right, Doc?
So Kevin is a former NHL hockey goalie. Not only that, now you are on NHL Tonight and on ESPN. So you have transitioned into an analyst, a very good one. You've also, one of my favorite parts about you, you are now like the, I don't even know what to say. You are in charge of breaking news for the NHL, whether that be player injuries, suspensions, trades, things like that. I mean, you have kind of taken on an identity in the social media world. And that's something I'm excited to get to talk to you about. But if you would, Craig, will you do me a little bit better introduction of our boy here? Not only that, how did you start working with him? What were some of the things that made him so special and that had got him in a long career in the NHL?
Wow. That's okay. I'll try to be somewhat succinct. I was head of rehabilitation for the Tampa Bay Lightning starting in 1999. And so they would, I had an exclusive contract, so they would fly the difficult cases that they couldn't work out and resolve there at Tampa out to me in Los Angeles. So after my first season, I was there before. It had gone well the first season, and we had a goalie named Danny Cloutier, who I worked with and helped quite a lot, and I liked quite a lot. And I heard they got a second goalie. His name was Kevin Weeks, and all of a sudden I was notified that by the trainer that we're sending out this other goalie, and he's got a problem. We can't figure out what the problem is. And we don't know what to do. So he'll be out. I go, okay. So I would always have him for 5 days, and I'd see him three times a day, and then I'd have to figure it out, get it worked and programmed, and send him back. So that's all of a sudden I meet this young man, and he is so classy. He is so sharp in his awareness, in his discussion, in his answers. And I'm going, man, the first thing within just a couple of minutes, my first thought is, what is he going to do after hockey? Is he going to be an actor? Is he going to be a lawyer? Is he going to be an agent? What's he going to do? Because this kid is unbelievable. And so anyway, we ended up, it worked out very well. He was pretty worried, but it worked out very well. And we had a talk, and I kind of figured out what the problem was. And then we got that taken care of and trained him and got him back. But after that, we just worked together, and we just clicked, and we just became closer and closer friends. And also, if he had problems, then I would help him. And he knew I was like you guys. I mean, I was always available for him. And so then after he left Tampa, and I saw also, you know, what was happening, the way some of the ways he was treated was kind of a little difficult that I saw those. Mm-hmm. Like they got Cabby Boolin, mm-hmm. And he was great, and everybody knew he was a great goalie, mm-hmm. but Kevin was too. Mm-hmm. And I saw that all of a sudden, Cabby Boolin lost his first, five games. Mm-hmm. And Tampa wasn't very good overall as a team, went out to LA, and Kevin got his chance, and I was out there in the locker room, and he put in two strong periods and had a shutout going, and then they needed to have a win for their new goalie, so all of a sudden they took him out and put in Cabby Boolin for the third period so he could get a win because of the politics of the
time. Kev, very, very rarely can people be like world-class in two like separate things. I mean, you have – there's a guy named Josh Waitzkin who was like the best chess player in the world and also got to the top at martial arts. Like, you were obviously one of the best goalies in the NHL at your time, and then now you're one of the best commentators. And so how do you do that? And like two, I know it's both hockey, but like they're two completely different things. Like what's the skill set that allows you to be able to do that?
Thank you for that. And thank you, Doc. I would say I approach, first of all, in the hockey space itself, in terms of playing as a kid, I was wired pretty much the same way I'm wired now. So I was hyper-focused, hyper-detailed, like perpetual student, work exceptionally hard. My parents never had to pull me, push me, prod me to work harder, try harder, be dialed in. I was always looking at goalies that were, and players and different athletes, especially Jordan, but that were older than me and more successful and further along in their journey, in their careers. And that have established a level of excellence, right? So, for example, like I was telling you guys off camera about being a kid in Toronto and how we got the bubble hockey and all that at our arena, Chesswood Arena, back home. But literally, like, I would watch all the goalies that were older than me. Mike Torkia, who went on to play in the NHL for Dallas. Jeff Bird, who should have played in the NHL. He played junior, played in the OHL. Among a whole host of other guys. And I would ask them questions. And I would literally, as an 8-year-old kid, go in the dressing room for our midget team, our 16 team. And I, hey, man, how do you do your glove? Like, how do you do that with your glove? How do you break your glove? And what do you do with your pads? Why do you wear those straps? I was that kid.
Curiosity, yeah.
Hyper. And detail and wanting to learn and never too cocky. Sure. Just wanting to learn from the people that were ahead. And I took a lot of those qualities that I had as a kid through my journey as a player. And I applied them the same way as a broadcaster. Even though, you know, I'm articulate and I could speak and do interviews as a young kid. Whatever, local paper, Toronto, whatever, tournaments, that sort of thing. Even when I got to junior and then in the minors and then, of course, in the NHL. But I was always studying, okay, what's Al Roker doing? What's this person doing? Whatever. I saw this interview with Elvis on YouTube. I see Jordan in these interviews. I see how he handles himself. So I was, to this day, studying the craft. And I wanted to approach broadcasting the same way I did playing. I didn't want to take it for granted. For certain people, it's like, I'll go there. I'll do it. Yeah, I could give it a whirl. It gets me out of the
show
house.
Show up and just...
Yeah. Like, but I always had the same level of kind of fundamental respect for broadcasting that I do for playing, if that makes sense. And quite frankly, I wanted to be great. So I didn't want to be on TV once a week and then you kind of go away and the genie's back in the bottle. And then try to do it again the next week. And the genie, like literally the NHL Network when it was in Toronto, I was on NHL Network Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. You know this. Drive to Pearson Airport back in Toronto. Fly to West Coast to do the West Coast game for Hockey Night in Canada. Do the pregame hits. Do race up to the booth sometimes during the anthem. Put on my headset. Call the game. Do color. Race down after. Do after hours with Scott Oak, and then fly out transcontinental the next morning back to the East Coast and do it all over again.
Well, who do you look – you said who you looked up to from a goalie standpoint. Who you look up to in hockey as commentators? Like who are some of the – I grew up with, like, Gary Thorne and and obviously Don Cherry. But, like, so who are the people that you looked up to, yeah.
I don't want anybody to feel left out if they're watching because they're, you know, we had some great ones and we still have some great ones. But Gary Thorne was outstanding. Doc Emmerich, boss. Yeah. Oh, yeah, Doc Emmerich was unreal. Mike Lang in Pittsburgh, scratch my back with a hacksaw. You know, the late, great Rick Jeanneret out of Buffalo, right? He was awesome. Harry Neal up in Toronto, Don Cherry, obviously up in Toronto, and among others, Dick Irvin, who did the Montreal games for Hockey Night in Canada. So there were several of them, and the time when I grew up, a lot of them were in their prime as broadcasters. And that, again, quite frankly, not only limited to hockey, like there are other broadcasters that I love because I'm an all sports guy as well. So watching John Madden, watching Ahmad Rashad, watching these other people and seeing the smart ones, especially how they were able to establish relationships and have relationships with people in the game, but especially relationships with players because the players are the product. Right. And if you have relationships with them, and you respect those. You know, it's funny, Doc was talking, right? I'm very cognizant of what it was like when I was playing and knowing who the broadcasters were, like Chico Resch as well, who were positive, fair, and objective and factual. They weren't trying to make it about themselves. They weren't trying to sensationalize. They weren't trying to discredit any player or any fan base or any organization. I was very cognizant of that because I would hear when I would get video and watch the games myself, or I would hear my parents would say, oh man, that guy was really nice or very fair or very good. Or that person, geez, they were so hard on you. They were so, so I never ever wanted to be that.
Sure.
Because I know their parents are watching, your grandparents are watching, your sister, your whoever, your siblings, your niece, your significant other. And I never wanted to be the opposite of that.
Well, and it kind of brings me to my, maybe my next question is you kind of answered it a little bit, but
no worries.
You're big on breaking news. Like I don't know, maybe the Adam Schefter of the NHL right now, whatever you want to call it. You're probably bigger than that. Let's be honest, Schefty. But anyway,
sit down, Schefty.
Yeah, come on.
Weeksy's got you beat.
How is that the core of it when you're getting these inside scoops and stuff? Just like your relationships with the players, with the GMs, with how do you manage maybe those two sides of it, of like being with, you know, the organizations that are trying to make a business and product, but then the players that are hopefully, you know, you've been in that position. Yeah. That maybe you have gotten the raw end of the deal or maybe a good end of the deal. Like how do you kind of balance those things together?
Okay. So let me take a step back. Another person that I didn't mention, there's, like I said, there's so many to mention, Bob McKenzie, right? The Bob father, Bob McKenzie was it for so long as the insider on TSN. And by the time I was like Bantam and then you're in midget and then I'm in the OHL playing and the whole thing around World Junior. And I had guys on my team that made World Junior teams. My goalie partner, Jamie Storr, played World Juniors two or three times, right? We were in Owen Sound. So Bob was kind of like that guy. He was that dude as the insider. The insider. Like sure. Bob McKenzie was the man. And basically what happened was, quite frankly, when I started broadcasting, I wanted to be as versatile as possible. I wanted to learn as many skill sets as possible, be humble and learn the craft. So whether it was doing color, whether all of a sudden they're like, hey, we need you to do sideline. Okay. Okay, we need you to do after hours with Scott Oak. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, we need you to
do yes. Yeah.
Honest to God, Zamboni hits. I almost got run over by the Zamboni in Calgary. I almost got run over by the Zamboni in Edmonton. Literally live on the air. You could YouTube it. And then I almost get run over. Then I got to race back all the way up in the service elevator to get to the broadcast booth and call the game. So to say all that, and the reason why I give you that context is I wanted to be a Swiss Army knife, and I wanted to be very proficient and good and excellent at all those different elements. And the one that you're asking about as far as the insider stuff, a lot of it is relationships and it's not always players. It could be a security guard, literally. It could be a Zamboni driver. And you know why? Because I'm nice to all those people because that's the way I was raised.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Right? I was raised that way. So I've never taken the people behind the scenes for granted because they're a big part of what goes on. Please.
Whenever I would go with Kevin to the playoffs at the end of the year where he would be working, I would very often go with his father and the two of us would sit and watch the game. And then we'd go and watch Kev do the post game. This is usually for the finals. And then we'd sit there. And then after it was over, all the other broadcasters left. And then there'd be a lineup of fans waiting to talk to Kevin. And he would end up, and his dad was the one who told him, he said that those are your fans. Those are the ones that put you in your place and that you speak to. And they are waiting specifically just to speak to you. And so he would end up speaking to one in the line and the next. All the others had long since gone. And he would be there and he was always so nice, listening, so respectful, and he enjoyed the people. And his dad would be telling him, his dad is a very wonderful, brilliant, kind, beautiful person. And he said he's treating them just like the way they would want to be treated. We'd all want to be treated. Mm. And that's the way Kev has always been. Every time I would go to dinner with him, and people who didn't know anything about hockey would come up to him literally and say, "Who are you?" You don't come across very many people. But
thank you. Not to pause you. Is there any way we could turn on AC? Because I'm hot too now.
Yes, please.
Please and thanks.
He'll get you right.
Yeah, notorious sweater.
Yeah, that's
notorious
right.
Sweater. And I'll get a sweat rag. And then we'll pick it back up. Yeah, sorry.
So that's Kev.
Yeah, you can blast that AC. But sorry, Doc, as you were, I didn't mean to take you off.
That's course, okay. I don't want you fainting.
Yeah. No.
So you are Canadian, but you grew up in Barbados, correct?
No. Like, so here's what it is. So both my mom and dad are Bajan, right? So they were born in Barbados, raised there, mom and dad, both of them. And then they both, when we had family emigrate to the UK, we had family emigrate here to the States, and then we had some emigrate to Canada. And then my mom followed my uncle and aunt to Windsor, actually, outside Detroit. And then she sent for my dad. My dad thought he was coming to Canada on a visit. And she's like, "Nope, I got all your immigration and I got the apartment and you're not going back. So this is home now. So get ready for the snow and here we go."
Okay.
That's kind of how that went. And then I was born in Toronto. My sister was born in Toronto as well. But it's so interesting. We were very culturally immersed in being Caribbean, right? Mm. Our culture was very front and center at home. So anything from music to food to arts to anything, it was very culturally rich in our environment.
Which kind of brings up the reason I bring that up is, was that a very, that's the Caribbean cultural way that was kind of instilled in you early on from your parents and stuff like that? Yeah.
For sure.
Relationships matter. Yeah. How you present yourself matters.
Yeah. Like a lot of old world values that I think. Doc and I were just talking about this actually a little bit ago. A lot of old world values that seemingly and confusingly have been eroded, I guess, if you want to say. Sure. And a lot of those things that are timeless, right? And a lot of those things, sometimes you hear your parents, your grandparents, or some older family members tell you things, and you're young. You wait till they look the other way, and you're kind of like,
"Yeah, right,
really." But to be honest with you, I never had the balls to do that to them directly, but but at the same time, a lot of what they told me is exactly what's happened.
Yeah,
they were spot on with so much of that stuff, like work ethic, mm-hmm. How you treat people, how you conduct yourself, how you present yourself, manners, decency, all these different values, and like, you have those things when you embody those things, they can take you anywhere in the world. Yeah. You can be anywhere. You can be in Belgium. You can be in France. You can be in St. Louis. You can be in LA. You can be in Oklahoma. It doesn't matter. You can be in Toronto. You can be in Montreal. Yeah. And those things are time-tested and true. Again, not as prevalent now in today's current world, but I'm very grateful that I learned those things for sure, because they help shape me in a lot, and they really give me a strong foundation, right? And, it's a lot to process when you're in high-level sport, especially coming up as a young male. There's so many things that are coming at you, and there's so many things that are happening.
Literally. A little bit of temptation.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
A little bit of temptation.
And you have to be able to process all these things. And I played with guys, and listen, we're all, we're all human. All of us have our warts, but I played with some guys that weren't necessarily able to maybe manage some of those things as well. And some of them took themselves out of the game as a result. Right. Or took themselves off course.
Sure.
And we all stub our toe. There's no perfection here, but I feel like, when I first went to go play junior in the OHL, that's when I really saw that. Because a lot of guys, you're billeting with families, you're playing in small towns across Canada, or here if you're playing USHL in the States, you're kind of a big fish in a small pond. Mm-hmm. You're a big fish in a small pond at the high school, at the wherever, in the community. People are wearing your jersey. You're 16 years old. You're 17 years old. People are chanting your name. And it was a lot to process, but fortunately I had that foundation, which made it a lot easier.
Right.
To kind of navigate a lot of those realities, I guess,
I remember,
as a kid.
Oh, go ahead.
Nope. Speak freely. No, continue.
Craig was, he's like, this is a while ago. He's like, "Do you know Kevin Weeks?" I'm like, "Hell yeah, the fucking Carolina Hurricanes." Thank you. And you guys caught lightning in a bottle that year. I mean, no one had you picked to get to the finals that year.
Yeah.
What was so special about that locker room? And who were the – was Doug Wade on that team? Or
no, Wader was on the Cup team, their Cup team that ended up beating Edmonton. But our 0-2 team – we went to the Stanley Cup final that you're talking about. What We had Rod Brind'Amour.
Oh, Hot Rod.
We had Roddy. We had Ron Francis. We had Glenn Wesley. We had Sean Hill. You know, we had a lot of these really good veterans that played in the league a lot. Arthur Zerbe, my goalie Stoller partner. Brother, yeah, we had young Stoller just came in the next year. Eric just came in the next year, was his rookie year. But
he's our savant. He knows everybody.
but here's what's wild, right? This is the interesting thing. I remember I got traded there. I had known Paul Maurice because he coached in the OHL before he went to Hartford to coach the Whalers, which then became the Carolina Hurricanes, right? So he coached in junior back home against me. And Jimmy Rutherford, who was their GM, was the GM of Paul Maurice's junior team that coached against me. And then I remember the top prospects game in 93 that I played in for the draft, Paul Maurice coached. And in short, when I got traded to Carolina, I had familiarity with those people. But I'll tell you what I liked about it is, unbeknownst to the public, everybody was in unreal shape. Everybody worked exceptionally hard. Jim, we had protein, the blender's going, yes, protein shake, right? We had the protein shakes going. Guys were really committed, in and out of the hot tub, stretching, prehab, rehab, all these workouts, all this different stuff. I didn't feel as though I always was and will be in hockey. I didn't feel like as much of a pink elephant from that standpoint. And our team, the work ethic was through the roof. The practices were through the roof. So right away, I'm like, this team's sick. Mm. This team's really sick. Like, we could do some damage here. And sure shit, we went into playoffs and did some damage and got all the way to cup final.
Is there like a transition, you think, in NHL? Because I feel like there's some legendary stories of, like, obviously hockey players kind of like to drink and they have a good time. But then, like, now, you know, like, a lot of the NHL players, I mean, they're health freaks, they're gamers, they're not out at the bars partying. Like, do you feel like there's been a transition from the league 20 years ago to now? Or?
Yeah, there's been a transition that way, for sure. Yeah. I feel like there's players are more conscious. There's more – plus – training methodology and techniques and rehab and prehab and all these different things.
Video,
technology. There's so many more advancements in a lot of those modalities and tools. Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, the game is so fast and it's so young. So yeah, we've seen a major shift kind of in that culture where, I don't know, sometimes I played games. I remember, like, road games and stuff. Sometimes we'd play games and guys would be like, okay, man, I'm going straight to the bar. I'm like, the bar? What? I just made 42 saves, bro. Like, I sweated literally, I don't know, 6 pounds, as you know, of perspiration. Literally 6 pounds of perspiration. What do you mean we're going to the bar? Right. I got to go get a steak, get a whatever and whatever, right?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Yes, to your point. It's shifted quite a bit that way.
Yeah,
it has.
But it's tough because you want to fit in with the guys. You kind of you got to play both.
100%. And look, it's never easy, especially for a goalie. The savior by young Devin Levi. It's never easy because that's one of the inconvenient realities about being a goalie. Is it's kind of, we need you. We have to have you. We hope you play well.
Right.
But we kind of, it's kind of that, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Like a kicker in football, sort of.
It's sort of kind of. So, because remember, they're trying to score on you in practice. So right. I come back to, even in the pregame warm-up. So it sets up an odd dynamic, mm-hmm. Don, which you know. But you need, one thing I was always big on is, hey, I'm very respectful of the guys out there doing their thing because I can't do all things as a goalie. And I'm very respectful of my teammates.
It's like it's different because even on the road, the goalies have their own room.
That's right.
All the other guys
all come together. The day, yeah.
But the goalies don't. Goalies are on their own thing. They have their own coach. They have their own deal. So there's together, but they're
so it's kind of a separation.
But it's a separation too.
You're almost like a golfer on a hockey
team. On an island. Yeah.
Now, let me piggyback that. This is a good point about you, Doc. I remember we were playing in Atlanta, right? We were playing in Atlanta one time. And I never out guys because, you know, I'm always protecting the fellas.
Yeah.
But I remember playing in Atlanta one time. I won't say what team, but we're playing against the Atlanta Thrashers. And I remember some of the boys. You'll hear them. So some of the boys had had a night before. They, you know, they went out, whatever. And some of the guys in the dressing room, they're like, Weeksy, we're going to need you, man. I got no legs. I'm like, no legs to myself. Like, no legs.
Yeah, what the hell?
What do you mean? They're like, wish. We're going to need you, man. It was a long one. We're going to need you in the first. I'm like, I don't know. We got peppered like 20-4, the shots or whatever it was in the first period. Kovalchuk had three breakaways. He scored on one. I stopped him on one. He tried to go high glove on the other one, just missed the crossbar. But as a goalie, you could never think, if you're serious, you could never think to do that.
Right.
Like, it wouldn't even be a conversation. Like, I didn't even do that in high school basketball.
Right.
Let alone playing in the National Hockey League.
Yeah, you're not going to show it to the boys like, I'm going to need some good defense
today. Yeah, exactly. So it's a little bit of a different approach. It's all consuming being a goalie. It's a 24/7 ordeal.
No.
Like, literally, you live with every game and every play and every save and every kind of every practice. You live with it all the time. It's a 24/7 thing. At least like it was for me.
Greg Maddux, he's got legendary stories of like Bobby Fischer, the chess player, called it building memory traces, which is like pattern recognition.
Yeah.
Were you like looking at like Fedorov and some of these other great players you played against, like on your past experience with them? Like they're on a breakaway, you know they're going to deke one way, and then like you bank that way when you – Yeah, so you're studying that before a game, and you're preparing for that. Yeah,
you're preparing for it. So you might do video, like it might be a part of the team video session. You might, like in Tampa, maybe you go with Reeser, but Jeff Reeser, goalie coach, who's Dallas' goalie coach, doing a great job now with Jake Ottinger and Wedgwood. But then he might show you, hey, this is what the tendencies are, or here's how you played when you were playing your best. These are things that were in my individual game.
Yeah.
And then, of course, then we'll have like the pre-scout meeting and the dressing, the main, dressing room before the game. And then we'll break off into subset for special teams, right? Power play, penalty kill. Well, I won't sit in for the power play meeting because that's just burning my time in prep. Mm-hmm. But for our penalty kill, of course, I'm sitting in there and they'll say, hey, here's where Fedorov rolls off here. Brian Leetch will come down here. Messier will come off the half wall. Alex Kovalev will come off the half wall. Lindros will be here. Joe Sakic does this. Rob Blake does that.
Your generation had so many good players.
Oh, it was unbelievable.
It's insane.
Mario's doing this. Gonchar's doing that. Crosby's doing this. Malkin's doing that.
Oh, God.
Like, literally, and they were on, all those guys are on the same team, those four I just mentioned. So, so you're just getting pattern recognition. You're just trying to get any sort of tendencies in any of these kind of pre-scoutings that you can, plus you watching games at home, plus being a student, and you're hoping that it plays to the tendency based on what you've seen of them. And that's why it's so difficult when you come in the league, because you don't necessarily have a bank.
Right.
You don't have a book. You don't have an encyclopedia on them. Right. So the longer you're in the league, the better it gets from that standpoint, because you're able to recognize some of the tendencies and traits of said teams.
Right.
Some teams will funnel everything to the net.
Yeah.
Some teams will be looking for the perfect, they want to paint a Mona Lisa. You to you to you, you to you to you, you to you to you, down to you, Mario score. So it's very, so it's pretty interesting.
What about on the other side of that then? So like obviously the team stuff, but you're saying, goalies are kind of on an island when it comes to the game, to the outside and stuff. What were some of the little things that you did growing up that maybe helped you? Because we always talk about being a goalie, it's a reactionary thing.
Yes.
You are reacting all day long. You're not, you're not hitting the golf ball where you're initiating it. You're just reacting. And so understanding where people are at and things like that. But what were some of the little things maybe that you did growing up being a goalie or that made you get better at that? Or how did you get better at that?
So many things. Great question. So many things. Like I would go to the hockey shop. There's one, that's what it was called. Or Just Hockey, which is still going today, which is kind of a leader in its time. And I would go in there with my dad, and I would, if I had to get skate sharpened, let's go to Just Hockey. Any excuse to go there, let's get tape. Okay, let's go there. Instead of going to the pro shop in our arena, right? And I would go through every glove, every blocker, the set of pads that weren't too high up on the racks, look at the skates, look at the sticks, look at the curves, just kind of studying the gear, because those are the tools for your equipment. So if Kirk McLean was using this type of Vaughn glove, all right, and his pads are this type of Vaughn, all right, but now Grant Fuhr is using the Brown, John Brown gear, and so-and-so is using Heaton and Bryan's, just to get a kind of a feel of how do these feel on my hand? How does this feel on my blocker? Like, how does the stick feel? Is this a curve I can shoot with? Those are some of the things. In addition to, I played with a good buddy of mine, Russian Jewish, both him and his brother, Mike and Dave Nemirovsky. And of course, if you remember USSR's, their hockey team with all the legends, with Krutov and Makarov and Fetisov and Tretiak and all the legends, they came from that school, right? The dad and the mom came from that school. So listening to some of the things that said Tretiak was doing, like throwing a ball off the wall and then juggling and playing handball and agility things and all these types of things. Anything that was like legal and ethical that could make you better, I was into it. Literally, honestly, I remember guys laughing at me when I started doing plyometrics, right? Yeah. Like plyos were a big thing in the Eastern Bloc. They're a big thing in Cuba and places like that to become more explosive. Like a lot of plyometric movements, jumps and bench hops, especially if all you guys are talking volleyball, like in the volleyball community, that was huge, track and field community. And for some of those other athletes, but they were doing a lot of that in Russia. They were doing a lot of that in Finland. So when I started doing some of that, people were looking at me like, why are you jumping up and down on the park bench? Like, what are you doing? And then a buddy of mine, Ish, who was great, really helpful. He had these bands. Then I was doing some of that. Then I get with Doc Morris. So cool. Then I get with Doc, and Doc's got these freaking sandals that have a half wedge of a rubber ball underneath the sandal. And they look kind of Birkenstocky, but not really. And I'm not a Birkenstock
They're
guy.
They're a little Jesus-y. Yeah.
They're kind of gaudy, but listen, he had me in them. Nobody else was in them. Like nobody else was using them. Right. And then through Doc, we ended up doing a bunch of stuff that nobody was into and that really helped. Then I got on the Dynavision board. I don't know if you guys know that one.
Oh, yeah.
Those squares light up before it was even a thing. So it's kind of a combination of all these things that really helped.
Well, maybe, Craig, can you maybe talk on some of the things? Obviously, we know like neurologic health is a good expression of output too. So like what are some of the things like you noticed right away with him neurologically that made him who he is, or, you know, some of the things that maybe you were working on or how you integrated that all together?
Well, I saw that he was so articulate. He was so curious, you know, so he always had questions. And so that's why it was inspirational for me. So I said, well, maybe there's some things we could try. And he was always open to new ideas. He was like, okay, let's try that. Why and what, but not just what he can do, but why? Mm-hmm. So that was the thing. So that as a result, so it was, you know, together kind of a teamwork where we would come up with ideas. So I think, if he's doing that or he needs to do this and do this better, then so a lot of it was based on, you know, my training with Yanda and sensory motor training and understanding his both reactive but also proactive and motor control and stabilization strategies. So that's what I was trying early on. So this was, you know, in the 2010, you know, because we always kept in touch and he'd come to me in the off season. So we were always talking. So it was a progression.
It was a progression. But what's wild is so much of that was just ahead of the curve, right?
Sure.
Like so many of these things I'm telling you are year 2000. So when you ask about the advancements now, imagine this is 23 years ago. There's so much of this stuff that he had introduced me to and that we started working on. And then just some of the other things, you kind of combine all that. It was way out ahead of it before it was the norm. Even something as simple as this, right? You guys will kind of laugh at this. I remember playing one night on Long Island when I was with the Islanders. Same thing. We're getting peppered. We're getting like literally halfway through the game. Deep in the second period, we almost gave up like 40 shots by that point. We're getting peppered and I'm dancing. Save after save after save
Stand
after
on save. Head,
on. I'm on. But the guys on the team would laugh and they'd be howling at me because I'm like, hey, man, do we have any Stimulstam? Go to the trainer, get some Stimulstam tablets. All of a sudden, my soles of my feet are cramping. My calves are cramping. Oh, my hamstrings are cramping. Fucking, we're on a penalty kill. So anyways, at the end of the second, I can barely waddle skate all the way from the far end back to the door at the old Coliseum, right, to get off. So I'm trying to, like, hydrate and all this shit, whatever. This is the funniest thing. So they've got me now on these IVs, right?
Yeah.
So now we come out for the third. We're still on a penalty kill. I'm trying, man. I'm literally trying. The body's just shutting down. Everything, right? Face, cheek, bottom lips, everything's seizing up, right? My whole body's shutting down. So they literally had to, we got a stoppage and play. The guys pushed me off like I'm in a wheelchair or like a wagon. They pushed me off because that's our end. They pushed me right off through there.
Board is just like,
I'm like the Robaxaset doll in the commercial, right? I'm like totally wood. So I get in the dressing room. They're like, okay, we're going to do, forget this. We're going straight to the hospital. I'm like, what? We're going straight to the hospital. Now, my aunt is a nurse for a long time, like 40 whatever years. She was a nurse back in Toronto. From England, from Jamaica to England to Canada, she was a nurse for 40-something years.
Sorry to interrupt this episode, guys. Hope you're enjoying it. Real quick, we have an amazing, amazing opportunity. The DNS World Congress is coming to Chesterfield, Missouri this June 14th through the 16th, 2024. If you guys attended our NDS or our Nerd Dynamics Congress, you know that we this is something that's very close to Brett and I's heart, something that we are going to keep doing and keep doing and keep doing. So this year's Congress is all about DNS, dynamic neuromuscular stabilization. This is literally like looking into the ocean, as Brett says. This is the lens that we look through each and every one of our patients with. And this is going to be an amazing opportunity because Pavel is back in town. So the originator, the creator of DNS, Pavel Kolash, is coming to the States for the first time in 5 or 6 years. I don't even know how long it's been. He's bringing along with him Elena Kobosova, which is literally the backbone of DNS. She's one of the most underrated neurologists in the world. So we're super excited to hear from her. Marcella Safarova, if you haven't heard her speak, she is literally the queen of pediatrics and musculoskeletal health. We also are going to have almost every single UNS instructor at the Congress who's going to be speaking. It's going to include demos, lectures, hands-on. We're going to have, as always, a get-together afterwards with your chance to talk to these guys face-to-face and have a couple drinks with them. This is going to be a great, great opportunity. There's also, it's a great price too, especially for students. It's only $4.99. So be sure to use the code DNSstudent to get your discount on that. For more information or if you have questions, go to gestaltedu.com/DNS-Congress. Thanks for tuning in, guys. Enjoy the rest of the episode.
So I know from, you know, you're a young kid, you're curious, you read all these the anatomy books and you're trying to be whatever, young and whatever. Oh, what's that? Oh, okay. And whatever. So I had already known what a catheter was. So now I'm there. I got to go in my gear in the ambulance on Long Island to the friggin' hospital in cheesy ass goalie gear, get there. And I'm lying on the table. Right. So now they got all these, they're trying all these things, you know, they do all the tests, all this different shit. And I hear the lady say, the nurse say, catheterization. Okay, we're going to initiate catheterization. I'm like, no! No! Why?
Just let me die.
Yeah, honestly, so we could put all the polish and all the veneer on this, but the catheterization that night on Long Island, like I was almost in tears.
Oh.
Just the thought of it. And then she comes with the tube. Then she's inserted. I'm like, supposed to go there.
Yeah, no, that's
it's the
that's
worst tough. Feeling, right? So that just gives you an idea of, you know, it's not always savory. You got to laugh at yourself and have fun. But that was one of those instances where, yeah, it was fricked up.
Now, can you talk about a night when you are in the zone?
Okay.
Like when, the puck is everything's moving slow and you just you see goalies who struggle. What is the difference? What happens to where some nights you're just so on, and then the next night, you know, it can all just kind of fall apart on the mental side.
And as you're saying that, I'm just watching Arizona just score this goal. This kid Carconi's been a nice find for them, Toronto kid too. Thank you.
Yep.
So basically, as you're looking at the rink there, it's the same ice, it's the same puck in the same building. And on some nights, that puck can seem like a puck. On nights where you're dialed in, it's like a volleyball. On nights where you're really dialed in, it's probably like a basketball. And on nights where you might be legally blind, it feels like a ball bearing, like a little BB. Yeah, it feels like a BB.
That's perfect.
Right? Literally, that's kind of what it's like. You go through those kind of ranges. But when you're dialed, at least for me, I can speak to that. When I was dialed, for the most part, if we had a morning skate, I was dialed in the morning skate. Then we go tea meal, start my prep. If I was somewhere with Doc, then we work on something. Then I go back to my hotel room before on the road, get back into my visualization. But the game started long before the puck drop. It's just like TV. To me, the show starts long before they turn the cameras on. And on the playing goalie side, my visualizations were crisp. I would try to bring, in my pregame visualization work, I would try to physically bring myself to the arena, see myself at the rink long before I got to the rink for the game. So I could see myself, okay, it's Montreal, walking into the Bell Center, get off the bus, coming in through the back, going in there. I know what the change room looks like, take off my suit, get my laundry bag, put on my undergear. I could see my gear, get to my stall. Now I'm in the main dressing room. I could literally see the whole movie. And the reason for that and what I learned is by doing that, I felt like my spirit and everything was there before I physically got there. And then by going through kind of the repetitions on what I would see from Montreal, Saku Koivu is going to do this. So-and-so is going to do that. Kovalev is going to do this. I felt like I'd already kind of pre-played the game in a way. And then I got there. Then it's just kind of going through my prep and my run up. Again, if Doc was there, then we'd do something specific. And then I'd go out there and just let it happen.
Now, do you get in the zone on the commentating side?
Oh, yeah.
Like some nights you kind of have it and other nights you just.
You know,
no one can ever tell the difference, but like you can kind of tell.
You know, it's wild. I've gotten to the point in broadcasting to where I feel like I'm in the zone all the time. And I never had that as a player at the NHL level. I would have it, then it was gone, or it was kind of there, or was quasi there. I would have it. Now I don't have it. Now I'm trying to regain it. But as a broadcaster, I feel like I'm, at this point in my broadcasting career, I feel like I'm in that zone all the time. Like we could do the game. Okay, they could patch me in, and we're doing it now. Like we're doing this.
You're in.
Whatever. We could be in the bed. I could literally be laying in the bed and do it. And that's not in a way of speaking arrogant at all. It's just because of the repetitions and the commitment to the craft and wanting to learn and being a student and working to refine it and to become a good journalist and just constant work. Yeah. And I feel like it's got me to this point now.
Sorry. That's an important point, which you just made. And this is the thing that was shocking to me, because I remember just when you first started doing those West Coast games early on.
Mm-hmm.
And Kev became... You know, I have a background in journalism. That's what led me to write my textbook, because I like to write.
Mm-hmm. Pete's sneaking out so we can grab a reservation.
That a boy, no problem. Yep.
And
just a touch.
And
good.
Yep, perfect.
And you're slender. Get out in there. You're slender, Pete.
Skinny, bud.
You're slender. Get in there.
If you talk about Kev, he always had a curiosity, and he had a habit of excellence. Kev always from the first few minutes I met him, he had curiosity and a total focus on excellence. What was the best thing? How could he be his best? And no compromise. And so what was interesting is, I mean, I with a background in journalism, I saw he turned himself into a true journalist. Now I've learned from this broadcast, also some of the people that, because he was paying attention to the broadcasters who interviewed him, because he knows every player in the league and he knows every player in the league's background, what brought them to where they are in the league. He knows every executive, key executive in the league, and what got them there. Because he's a people person. Mm-hmm. And there was a lockout season, you remember, years back.
Oh, yeah.
While others were taking the year off, he was going and watching amateur games and talking to the players, because it was what he does. It was who he is. So if there was no NHL games, then he went to go amateur games.
Yeah. And men's league, too.
Yeah. And it kept him sharp, and it kept him curious, and it kept him in the zone. And it can make it. And this is Kev.
This is the lesson
that hopefully people that are listening understand about a true commitment to excellence.
You can feel it. You can see it.
Yeah. What about? Let me piggyback that for one second.
Yeah, yeah.
Interesting. Sorry. Yeah. So, Doc, thanks for reminding me of that, because I literally could see myself being at some of those rinks now. And the same thing during COVID. Like during COVID, the league shut down. I was on the air to tell the world that the league shut down. Telling the world, like, the league is on pause now. That was one of the most unique things. I've been on for a lot of very unique moments in league history. That was probably the most unique of all. And I don't know if you guys go back, and for a lot of you that are tuned into the pod, but New York City, man, it was a movie set. Not the way you see it with the cars honking, this, that, whatever. It was eerie. You couldn't see anyone. Ghost town. All you could see is a sewer, the steam coming out of sewers. That's all you could see, other manhole covers.
You could hear everything.
It was so eerie, honest to God. And we had to tell the world that the league had shut down. We were on the air on the NHL Network, literally. But the reason why I say that is Doc's point, to piggyback your point, is my thing was, well, why aren't we doing content? Mm. There's no better time. Everyone's home. Everybody needs something positive to hang on to. Everybody's in a state of, we all are, confusion, uncertainty. What does this look like? Can't buy toilet paper. Now we're lined up at the store. Seriously, like 50 people deep to go in a grocery store. Is this normal?
Yeah.
Like, what are we doing here? And, you know, people, family members can't get to see, like, the last time, this could even make me emotional. The last time I literally saw my dad before COVID was here in St. Louis, NHL All-Star Weekend.
Oh, wow.
Literally. Wow. And didn't see him and see my mom and him and my sister for almost 2 years. Wow. Because the border was closed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then when we tried to go home to see family, then we got in trouble for going home to see family that you hadn't seen in 2 years, which is absolutely asinine.
That's right. Insane.
So I started doing content during that point in time. I'd be doing Instagram lives. I would get different guests.
Twitter,
I would do this stuff and just want to give the fans some semblance of normal and connect with them and give them what they now had more time to consume, right, albeit under uncertain circumstances, but give them a flavor of what we typically do on there, right, for them to have in that time.
Mm-hmm. How important are rituals for you? I ask this because you watch NHL goalies, like, yeah, after a goal, you'll see them like,
yeah,
meticulously skate from both sides, yeah, hit the post. The horn blows, the game's over. They have to go through some like little ritual. Is that
Doc knows?
Yeah, is that important for you?
It's almost all rituals for me.
Right.
Here's what I learned. Right, this is pretty interesting. I wish we had 3 hours on this, and Doc, you know this because it's like you elite practitioners in your own way, or it's like an elite surgeons and all of you elite people in what you do in your field among the best in the world, right? In order to do that, it's one thing to develop the skill set and the techniques and, you know, as we talk about the human IQ and all those things that people touch. But it's another thing to not only have that, but you ultimately want that to be consistent. So you can't say when I was playing, oh, we're playing the LA Kings at, pardon me, we're playing the LA Kings at Crypto, as it's called now, Staples for all those years, or the old LA Forum. Man, I was out on Sunset Boulevard last night. Man, we're out in Santa Monica, and I'm going to do, and then go there and think you're going to play well. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to have a routine, and the routine complements your skill sets, I find. It kind of, it binds with them and it insulates them to give you a repeatable process, which will then give you the best chance of having success. I do the same thing in broadcasting. If, pardon me, if my routine is off, I still know I'll go and rock it, but I feel very different if my routine's off. Like in a day, like literally it could be the, whatever, I don't know, we've got to take our son to the pediatrician in Jersey, right? I don't usually have to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's different.
Now it's a different wrinkle.
Right. Well, right? I think it comes back to pattern recognition. You know, correct, if you do the same things over and over again, and if something is off, then you are drawn aware. That's how you learn.
But and to that point, where you also learn, to your point, to kind of expand on that, is things are going to happen.
Yeah.
Right? Sometimes it's a ceremony. They're honoring great Mark Messier before the game. They're whatever, you know, Montreal, then they're honoring somebody in Montreal. The bus breaks down, the flight this. I've gone through all the gamut of those things. So as I got older in my playing career, they didn't throw me as much. But I'm very, very, as he's nodding on, I'm very structured.
I can tell.
I had heard of that a lot.
That's why you're successful.
That's why you're successful.
I had heard of that a lot. So I don't show up to like the studio, for example, without a suit. And then I'm there in track pants. And then I'm not shaming those things because I love wearing casual gear, right? Like I love wearing Jordan gear, Nike gear, what have you, that type of thing. But anytime for any show that I've done the last 16 years, I've never gone to the studio and then let me change into. No, I go there ready.
Yeah. You probably travel with.
I started doing that again. I traveled in this today.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah.
Yeah, I traveled in this today. If it's personal travel, maybe it's different, but the last, I'd say this entire season for any of my travel for flights, I've been in this again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, it's kind of nice too. It just like puts you in the right mindset. Like, you know, when you put that on, you're here for work. 100%. Like, you are here in St. Louis for work this weekend.
And you, like my parents always said, you never know who you're going to see. Like the last time flying out of Newark, I just come through security and there's a gentleman who's on TV, I think in the local ABC affiliate in Jersey, New York. And he spots me and he's got his son and his son's got his hockey team jacket and colors. It's like, you know how that is, blah, 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 blah. And they introduce himself and the son's a goalie. They're just coming back they're just coming back from a tournament in South Florida. So anyway, he introduced me to his son. He's like, oh my God, I watched the network, just that, the other, blah, blah. So take a picture, talk to his son, give him some, you know, coach him up a little bit. And then the dad goes and tweets this, right? Which is super nice of him. But the point is, that's a prime example that you never know who you're going to see.
Right. Good point. And being prepared.
And be prepared. And you never know. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You never know who you're going to see. So that was really cool. I spoke to them for like 15 minutes, but I'd rather be dialed in.
Yeah.
And be ready. Yeah. If that makes sense.
As we wrap up, two questions.
Where are we going?
Go ahead. Have you scored a goal?
No.
From the no.
No, we just
have
we
you
just,
come close.
I did. And we just ran it on the NHL Network this past week. You can find the clip. I came close against the Rangers. It was my first start against the Rangers for the Islanders at the old Coliseum on Long Island. And I told our producers, they ran it like literally 3 days ago on the air. I told them it was 5 feet. I missed by about eight. I don't know. No, eight's an exaggeration. No, I lied. I said it was 2 feet. I missed by about 5.5. Mm. But it was on the way there. I got the elevation. It was on the way there. And when it bounced in the offensive zone, then it started spinning, and then it just kind of skidaddled to the right. Yeah, but that was as close as I came. That was fun.
Have you?
Fight never. In NHL, never. Not in pro.
There's some legendary goalie fights.
Yeah. No, exactly. Never. And some of those guys love the action. I would probably, and I know this sounds weird because you don't get that, I would probably rather have to defend somebody or do that on the street than I would.
Yeah,
playing, yeah, you know, okay. Like those a family your, member or a loved one or whatever. Yeah.
Although my favorite hockey goalie fight was Danny Cloutier, who's a famous fighter.
Tough. He was really tough.
Well,
which is really tough.
And when he was in the minors, he got in a fight with a player from the other team, his brother.
Sylvain Cloutier.
That's so hot.
That's hilarious. Sylvain
Cloutier. That's the Cloutier brother.
Yeah. Sylvain Cloutier. Yep.
That's my favorite.
That is legit.
And that night they had beers and everything was fine.
That is legit. Danny and Sylvain Cloutier fought. Yeah, that is legit. And I go back to playing against him in junior before him and I played together in Tampa when Doc was there. So I always say that we pay guys that are on ice security and we pay them to be specialists in on ice security, just like they paid me to stop pucks or to talk now. So we let them handle that. We let them handle that stuff.
Fair.
Let them handle that stuff.
Well, it seems like maybe just to close this up, give us the State of the Union of NHL. So you have Connor Bedard. I mean, he is literally the golden child. A youth surgeon.
You got neighbors who lose, though. Don't look at him.
So give us the current state of the NHL. What like the next 5 years? Yeah. Give us a bold prediction, maybe, or something like that.
Well,
we're kind of betting men, so maybe NHL.
I see where you're going.
He might have a gambling problem.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm very fortunate to be a U.S. citizen and an American citizen, and
newly
and born Canadian. So I will tell you this, objectively speaking. There's going to come a time, I think, where in the not too distant future, where there are going to be more American-born players in the NHL soon, rather than Canadian-born players. Wow. And we're already seeing that shift. They're closing the gap.
That's a bold prediction.
And a big part of that is, in no favoritism, just fully objective and having lived in both countries and loving both and living in both and our families in both. Objectively speaking, we have a lot of players that have played either U.S. college hockey, junior here in the States, junior back in Canada, they play professionally in the minors or in Europe, or they play in the league or all the above, that now live in South Florida, that now live in St. Louis, like
Dallas
we've seen here, that
yeah.
now live in Dallas, yeah. that now live in Tampa, that now live in Columbus, that now live in Colorado, that now live in Arizona. So there's no surprise that, you know, a few drafts back now, we had five players drafted right from here, from St. Louis in the first round.
Wow.
Right? Now you're seeing guys come out of Arizona, not only Austin Matthews, but you're also seeing other guys as well, right? Matthew Nyes, who plays for Leafs. We're seeing all these guys out of Florida, like the Hughes brothers, Jack Hughes, Luke Hughes, whatever, Shane Gostisbehere, Jacob Chychrun. So that's a bold prediction that I could say. I could say that definitively. And we just have the scale of the population here. Obviously, Canadian population is the same as California, right? Give or take 30 plus million. It's 10 times the population here. And all these players are retiring here. Mm-hmm. And they're giving their knowledge to a lot of these young girls and boys that are playing the game. And their parents, you can't pay for that. Right. You can't. That's invaluable. You can't even put a price on that. Right. When you have them coaching you, the insights and the experience they could share and some of the expertise. So that's one. You want another one? Mm-hmm. I don't think that we are going to see more than three goalies in the NHL play north of 60 games in a season. maybe as little as three goalies.
So like platoons?
A lot more platoons. We're seeing more platooning now. So a lot more 1-1A as opposed to, you know, certainly when I was coming in the league and you had all those studs, Belfour, Fuhr, Waugh, all these legends, right?
Yeah, they were playing Hashik, every single damn game.
I mean, Vernon, Marty.
Mikey Vernon.
Right? All these guys were playing. Cujo. Cujo played
big. Oh, Curtis Joseph. Cujo. Back to St. Louis.
Right? Yeah. Like, all those guys, they played a lot of games. I remember, like, even I played over 54 times, over 60 twice. Mm-hmm. And then in the minors, my first 2 years, I played over 60. Mm-hmm. And I don't think in the NHL this year we might have four guys that play 60 plus.
Wow. That is a bold statement.
Yeah, there's a lot of...
Because that's going to affect a lot of different things.
The biggest thing now is, it's not happening, so you're not seeing it as much, mm-hmm. right? Because I was seeing Cujo, oh shit, okay, well, he plays all those games. Sure, plays all those games. Wow, Marty play all those games. That's a thing. You want to play all those... Ranford, you want to play all those games. Mm-hmm. Now, you're not really seeing it, so it's less of the norm.
It's kind of like pitchers.
It's baseball. Like pitches. It's like the pitch count. Mm-hmm. So I'm not seeing Roger Clemens go deep into games.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? You're not seeing El Duque and these guys go deep into games.
He's not throwing nine innings 5 days a week.
That's right.
Yeah.
Pedro. Pedro, I see Pedro at MLB Network. He's not a big, but Pedro was a bolt like on the mound. Go deep into games. You get the pitch count. So it's kind of similar in goalies now where they're saying, oh, well, we don't really
have. Is the leash shorter? Like if a goalie's struggling now, are they quicker?
Teams are more apt to go to. Because again, you can't say, well, Belfour's body of work, mm-hmm. right? Marty's body of work. Fuhr's body of work. Luongo's body of work. Lundqvist's body of work. And think of all those guys that I just mentioned, that a lot of those guys that have retired, Pecorine in Nashville, right? Mika Kiprusoff in Calgary, Henrik, Quickie's still going, which is unbelievable. But a lot of those goalies played big games, big volume, Habib Bull and all these guys. And now we don't see it.
So does the price tag change on that then? Like how do you, because that's the difficult piece then if you're a junior.
That's the money ball
as piece. A goalie.
Yeah. Continue on.
There's not as if they're platooning, there's probably not as much money for a person.
They don't play as much of a premium.
Yeah, go be a striker. Go be someone play defense. You know,
for sure, it's a factor because you don't necessarily have to pay the premium for the marquee franchise quarterback.
Per se,
right? Like Jake Ottinger is a young stud in Dallas. We just had him on, who's a guy that played probably 60 this year. Connor Hellebuck will play 60, but aside from that, it kind of drops off pretty quickly of guys that play that. So that's another.
It's kind of frustrating too because when the playoffs come around, you still got your one guy.
You still, but a lot of teams aren't shy to go to two.
Yeah, that's true.
And Vegas wasn't shy to go to five.
But is there wear and tear?
Five.
Yeah, I know. Amazing.
Could you imagine if you're Andy Reid? Yeah. Okay. You're Andy Reid with Kansas City Chiefs here in Missouri. Or Missouri, we'll Missouri it up. Yeah. Imagine if you're Andy Reid and you're like, oh shoot, Patty Mahomes went down. Who do we have? All right, two's gone. Who do we have at three? Okay, who do we have at four? Who do we have at five? Vegas went through five goalies in their inaugural year to get to the Stanley Cup final, which is historic, let alone last year in their sixth year, they went through five again to win the cup. Mm-hmm. Never happened before in 100 years of NHL hockey.
It's crazy.
Wow. Is there wear and tear the more you play, though? I mean, is that...
Oh, yeah. Like it's high volume. There's wear and tear. But I don't know. You want the smoke or you don't. I wanted the smoke.
Mm. Yeah.
And the Greats definitely want it. Mm-hmm. You know, they want that. Hey, some of those guys that had that pedigree, they get an FU match. You're not taking me out. What do you mean I'm not playing? I'm playing. And then it became a thing. But some of them had the pedigree and...
Yeah, the it factor.
They had the it factor and the resume. And, you know, I don't really think is probably one of the only black goalies in the world that I'd be able to kind of say that and get away with it. Let's be realistic. Like, I don't have strength in numbers in that department, right?
Right.
So it was a bit of a different reality that way for me, for sure. But yeah, I think if you really want it, you really want the action, you want the smoke, then you want to be in there. Yeah. Like Jordan Binnington.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just when I told the world that Binner is going to shock the world. And everybody looked at me like I had 15 heads. Mm-hmm. I said he's going to shock the world. And he shocked the world.
He did. He literally stood on his head. He literally stood on his head.
I'll tell the story. I saw him at PK Subban's parents. They had a barbecue in Toronto. My wife, my mom, and dad, and I go there, and I saw Binner there, and Binner came up to me, and he goes, Weeksy, I'm ready. I go, Binner, really? He goes, yep. I've been in AHL. I'm ready, Weeksy. I know I could play in the show. I'm like, Binner, I got your back. Just keep having that mentality. Keep kicking. St. Louis was in last place early January. They had a road trip to Philadelphia. They call up Jordan Binnington. He gets a shout out in his NHL debut. They go from last, dead last, to making the playoffs in the West, to winning the Stanley Cup on the road in Boston in Game 7. Or Game 6, whatever it was.
Yeah, it's insane.
Crazy. And he literally stood on his head. I mean, it was
on his brain.
Unbelievable.
I had radio people arguing with me in Boston before that game on the road. We finish our NHL Network stuff. You know, you do the different, you know, the whole thing. Whatever, we need you on. Okay, you go on. Hey, man, Binnington's going to shock the world. I told you guys before the playoffs started, he's going to shock the world. He's going to shock the world. I'm telling you, he's going to have a game here in Boston. Sure as shit, he went and had the game, and the rest is history. St. Louis Blues with
Maybe Stanley you Cup. Had a role in that.
Buddy. That's right.
Hey,
I love it.
Hey, it's, you know what? It's a mutual admiration society, right?
I love
We're
it.
We're all... there's enough to go around.
We have taken so much of your time. We have a dead cow waiting for us next door.
Nice.
So we got to roll, otherwise we're going to give our
thank you, Craig.
Yes.
Craig,
thanks so much, Doc. Thank you.
Yeah, absolute legend. Thank you, Doc.
Absolutely, man.
Kevin Weeks, you're a legend in two different things.
That's right.
So absolutely insane. Oh,
thank
gosh,
you.
I really appreciate
thank
you.
Thank you, guys. Yeah. Now, in closing, yeah. I'll just kind of close out. No, guys, listen. Appreciate what you guys are doing. Doc, thank you for being you. Thanks for all your help and all your support, man. You're the best. And it's really good that you guys are doing this and what you're embarking on, because a lot of these experiences that you had and that you guys are having now too, because of patient confidentiality, and you want to maintain that in your relationships, there's a lot of these things that people don't see, right? And there's so much of you practitioners that you bring to the table on a day-to-day basis. And sometimes it's not always like physical or a rehabilitative thing.
Yeah.
A lot of times it's just the people element.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it can just,
point.
Right. It's the people element.
And being a friend, being a human being,
being a voice. There's a lot of late night calls. There's a lot of dinners. There's a lot of meetings. There's a lot of texts. There's a lot of these different things that people in your role provide that go beyond rehabilitating a shoulder or assessing, you know, a C5 injury, right? So that's really important that you're bringing a lot of this to life by what you're doing now. So it's really cool.
Appreciate you.
What a superstar. Yeah.
No problem.
Craig, thank you, brother.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Double time. Let's go. We'll be back for third.
So. Yeah.
We got weeks in Bubble Hockey.
Are we still rolling?
Yeah.
It's going to cost you guys. You guys better open up the vault.
Oh, Let's go, baby.
Hey, listen,
one
Doc.
More, baby.
Hey, we have that on record.
Unload the cannon.
Hey, Doc, we have that on record. It's not going to be no bubbly.
Are you going to take Craig as your partner, though?
That's true.
We're always partners.
Ken's my man and then my negotiator.
Yeah, that's it.
Minimum $1,000.
Yeah.
It's going to cost you. Hey, is the camera on?
Yep.
No alligator arms. You guys are practitioners.
Hand them out, baby. Hand it out.
Yeah, let's extend those levers.
I'm about to get in trouble, so we're going to cut this. Guys, good luck with patience. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Love you all.
Thank you. Love.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Gasol Education Show. If you liked it, share it, subscribe to it, send it to your friends, send it to someone that needs to hear this message. We really want everyone to be able to tune in and get the best clinical advice they can, which we're hoping that we're giving to you with these special guests. So if you have any questions, please feel free to reach out to us, or if you have any suggestions on upcoming conversations, let us know. For a list of our upcoming courses, we're adding them all the dang time. So go to gestaltedu.com, click on courses, and they'll all be right there for you. All right, have a good day.